And now, from the Room 111 studios, it's Hacking Engagement with James Sternovan.
Hey there, listener. Welcome back to the Hacking Engagement podcast. I'm so glad you're here. One of my passions since the semi-return to normal instruction and hopefully the receding wake of COVID is to retain successful aspects of virtual instruction and then to include them in in-person instruction. Now, I've heard a lot of students, a lot of instructors say, I never want to be on another Zoom call. That's not realistic, man. I mean, there were aspects of virtual instruction that facilitated learning. We need to keep those. In this episode, four powerful virtual tactics will be explored. Granted, each of these ideas is much older than the pandemic and had been utilized extensively in in-person instruction before COVID. I get that. But they were particularly well-suited to virtual instruction, and they should absolutely be included now in face-to-face learning. Here are the four tactics. Here's the four focuses of this episode. I'd like you to consider using a virtual interactive syllabus. Now, a great tool to create one of these is called Lucidchart. And on the show notes, I have an image of the syllabus that I am using in my education technology class that my guest was part of. And it's attractive. It's loaded with links to HyperDocs, and it's highly interactive and user-friendly. It's better than the page after page after page of syllabus that we're required to hand out in every class. I mean, it's part of the class. But this is what I posted on my learning management system, and this is what students utilize. Okay, the next idea is to populate your virtual syllabus with highly interactive HyperDocs. And HyperDocs are these highly attractive to-do lists. And there's a link to the HyperDocs Girls website. And you can see if you look at the image of the interactive syllabus, there's lots of links. And then also on the show notes, there's an image, there's a screenshot of one of these HyperDocs for a certain week. All right, the next idea is to incorporate higher level thinking prompts. And this should be the case regardless of whether it's in person or virtual. And then finally, utilize landing pads where students can submit work and then collaborate. They can submit it virtually and then collaborate virtually. To help me explore these ideas, I conscripted Ethan Miller, who's a primary source. Ethan is an education major at Muskegon University. He's been in a class I taught in person and one that I taught virtually. He's passionate about how much better in-person instruction is, but he's coming around to virtual learning's potential. He's the perfect guest for this episode, and he's going to be a magnificent teacher. Anybody that's listening to this podcast, that's looking for a social studies teacher, boy, Ethan would be a great candidate. Okay. So that's where we're headed. I think you're going to love this episode. Buckle up. Here's my elevator pitch for my brand new book, Teaching in Magenta. This book provides 100 ways to create a magnificent day in your classroom. Once you start stringing some magenta days together, you and your students will experience profound well-being and deep joy. That's Teaching in Magenta, which is now available on Amazon's virtual shelves. Well, here we are in the Room 111 studios, and autumn has descended in the Buckeye State. A couple of days ago, it was hot. Now it's 58 degrees and pouring down rain, so things are changing. And I'm here with a friend. His name is Ethan Miller. Say hello, Ethan.
Hello, everybody.
And Ethan's residing about 70 miles east of me. Is it kind of chilly and rainy where you are right now?
It is. It's been raining all day.
Yeah, it's just like autumn comes and just a lights turn off or something.
Yeah.
And so the first thing I want to do, before we get into our topic, please describe yourself and, you know, tell us who you are. Give us the rundown on Ethan. Go for it.
So I'm Ethan Miller. I am currently a sophomore at Muskingum University.
Right.
And my major actually just got approved by the state, I believe, and it's called Inclusive Social Studies. So it's the social studies, history, and then special education combined into one. So
wow.
I'm really excited about that.
That's awesome. And
yes.
So you decided to become a teacher. I know Ethan. We go back a couple years. I remember talking to you that you were in an AP class in high school?
Yes.
And you really liked your teacher.
I did. That was the second one. I had a really good one for my regular US history sophomore year.
So you had
I took advanced placement.
So you had a couple role models. You had a couple role models. So give them a shout out. Talk about them a little bit. What was it?
So shout out first to Mr. Keith Nedved. I believe he's teaching in Kent right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that was for U.S. history, 10th grade. And I'd always loved history throughout school to that point. But finally, it was the way he explained it and the concepts that he used and how he taught that just really got me hooked. It wasn't he didn't throw a bunch of jargon in there that wasn't needed. It was straight to the point. And it was very eye-opening to study U.S. history in a different way.
Okay. Okay, so you resonated with him.
I did. I really did.
That doesn't surprise me. You're an engaging person. And I was drawn to your personality from the second you were in my class. And so I could see that being a two-way street. I bet he loved having you as a student.
He did.
And you're humble.
Who knows?
Okay, so that's one. What's your other role model?
My other one was Mrs. Leslie Seitz. She actually also went to Muskingum a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had her junior year for American government and then senior year for advanced placement U.S. history.
Uh-huh.
And people always at my high school were like, don't take AP history. It's so hard. And it's boring. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to challenge myself.
Good for you.
And I did. And I ended up really loving it. And it was a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it got me out of a couple classes here at Muskingum. And I couldn't have been happier for that. Because then I can finish. I'll still finish in 4 years. But I can take some more classes. More on in-depth opportunities with history.
Okay, now you're no longer a student of mine. But I'm going to give you an assignment. And you absolutely must share this episode with those two individuals. I think it would make them feel really good.
I think it definitely would.
Okay, now you, like most contemporary students, are a primary source when it comes – primary source. I mean, AP history guys got to love that phraseology. So you're a primary source when it comes to experiencing virtual instruction. I mean, everybody who's a student has experienced a lot of virtual instruction over the last – number of months. So yeah. I want Ethan Miller's take on this experience. What's it been like for you?
It was different to begin with. When COVID first hit March of 2020,
mm-hmm.
I come from a very small town in Ohio. I don't have Wi-Fi at my house.
Wow.
Normally.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So being an AP, taking College Credit Plus and was the managing editor of our yearbook, there was a lot that was on my plate having no Wi-Fi, and I'm like, well, what am I going to do? And luckily I could live with my grandmother just a few miles away. And I was able to have Wi-Fi and meet all the needs, meeting virtually with AP History and, you know, continuing the synchronous classes as well as one that was asynchronous.
Hey, hold on. I have to interject here. I think it's highly interesting that you're an AP student without Wi-Fi at home. I don't think there's a lot of people in that category. And then you go to your grandmother's house to get it.
Yes.
So you go to your grandparents' house to become high-tech.
I do.
I'm sorry I interrupted, man. That just made me laugh.
Yeah. We have cell service, so we have that. But Wi-Fi is kind of hard to come by.
Okay. So you're going up to your grandma's to get internet.
Yeah. And sitting in her room, I don't even know what room it was. It was kind of like an office.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard to be devoted to staring at a screen.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I want to be in person. That is my kind of learning and even teaching as well. And just not being able to see all of my teachers and my professors really, like, it dropped my, I don't even want to say sense of awareness, but just of how much they actually do for you.
Okay. Go explore that a little bit. That's an interesting statement.
Yeah. So actually, to tag along a little bit more about me, I was the vice president of my class.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were in meetings at least once a week deciding what are we going to do for graduation, all this stuff. And there was a point where I was like, well, it's so sad because had I known that it was the last day walking out in March, I would have said so much more stuff to my teachers and thanked them for what they had done for me.
Uh-huh.
But it's that teacher-student relationship that in person is just so much more.
I like that answer. In other words, it's just so much harder to forge a deep bond virtually. Ethan, you just muted yourself. There you go.
Yep.
But you can absolutely improve in this regard, and maybe that's something that's going to come up as we continue to talk.
Mm-hmm.
But it's essential that you understand that it's a challenge. It's much harder than when you see someone face-to-face. But there can be great strides taken in that realm.
Very much so.
Would you say that people, teachers, have gotten better at virtual instruction over the months?
I would 100% say yes.
Uh-huh.
And even like from the student side, during that, I was using three different like conferencing applications. I was using Blackboard, I was using Google Meet and Zoom, and it's going back and forth from all of them was just crazy.
Right.
But I think now that we've established the big two, I'll say Microsoft Teams and Zoom, that they're able to dive in right away and know what to do.
Okay. This is perfect. So you were in my in-person class, which was an intro to education class. So you and I got to know one another there.
Yes.
But then last summer, you were in my education technology class, which was a summer school class, totally virtual, was virtual prior to the pandemic. And yet my instruction evolved as a result of all the virtual instruction I was doing in other classes. Now, there was two things that evolved in me as a result. One is the absolute necessity in a virtual setting to include higher level thinking prompts. And then the other one was on-demand learning via HyperDocs and the interactive PDF syllabus. Now, you're a man who prefers in-person instruction, and you are more than welcome to critique this class. I my feelings will not be hurt. I learn from situations like that all the time. In fact, I learn more from those type of situations than when someone says, you're my favorite teacher, or I really enjoyed that lesson. I learn more from a student saying, you know, I didn't understand this, or, you know, that didn't work for me. Reflect on the experience of being in my education technology class with the higher level thinking prompts and the virtual on-demand syllabus. Go.
It honestly, when I signed up for the class, I'm like, okay, I know Professor Sturdivant's teaching this. I know what to expect.
Right.
And it was 100% what I expected. Because we had touched on HyperDocs a little bit in 110.
Yeah.
And it really, for me, it made it a very good experience because I could see everything that was due and it was easily accessible.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I think some teachers, not to say they're not organized, but it's a little all over the place where yours was right there. I could see what was due each day. And the explanation behind each project was just amazing, especially using higher level thinking. And we just talked about that. Well, we talked about it in Intro to Ed with Maslow.
Yeah.
And his hierarchy and...
And Bloom's.
Bloom's, yes.
Uh-huh.
And we just talked about that today in my educational psychology class.
Right.
And it all comes back around to what we need to do and what the student needs and what the teacher can provide.
Okay. Now, you were somebody who generally... Like, there was 12 students in the class, and you were generally one of the first ones done and had your work submitted. So, to me, Ethan, that tells me that you kind of enjoyed the on-demand nature of the class, where I can guarantee you, I've seen you in work, that you're a pretty advanced kid, and I imagine there have been classes, in-person classes, where you were sitting there kind of twiddling your thumbs while the rest of the class got caught up to where you are. Did you appreciate that ability to just storm ahead at your own pace?
I did, and I tried not to get too ahead of myself.
Uh-huh.
Because that has always been a little bit of a problem.
Right.
But, yeah, and just again, just seeing more even planning what I need to do.
Okay.
Because even if I was the first one done, I worked almost every day this summer, and it was just finding time to get, you know, half of the project done and then doing the other half the next day.
I think that we did this little thing where we created a video, and I think it was on information literacy, right?
Yes.
And I paired you up with a student who also did a magnificent video. You did one, she did one, I paired you guys up together. And then you guys collaborated on that, and you critiqued one another's videos. That was a pretty powerful experience, wasn't it?
It was, and I believe that person was actually in the master's course, and
uh-huh.
I was a little intimidated going into that, you know. But we had almost the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I had no part in that whatsoever. I was not part of that conversation. I just asked you guys for some feedback afterwards. I spoke to her afterwards, and she was very impressed with you, and she was saying much the same. So, you know, I mean, sure, you could do that. People do it all the time in in-person instruction. But I think that virtual instruction has great potential. And I think that higher-level thinking prompts, the on-demand learning via interactive syllabus is really helpful to that. It means a lot for me to hear you say that it was a positive experience, because I take your criticism or praise very high. I mean, I put a lot of stock in that. So that's wonderful to hear. Now I'm going to challenge you, because, you know, virtual instruction is not going away. You know,
absolutely not.
But it is the way, like, you went to a small high school, and let's say you wanted to take Arabic, and no one at, what was your school? I forget.
Garraway High School.
Garraway High School. No one teaches Arabic at Garraway High School, but you want to take it. And so you could take it virtually. That's going to happen a lot more and more. So I want you to think about the two things that we focused on, the higher level thinking prompts, the on-demand interactive syllabus. Speculate on ways that you might be able to utilize those two concepts in-person instruction.
I really like the HyperDocs, and
right.
I'm also in another. I'm in assessment and education this semester, and digging into how we assess and using HyperDocs as a way to do that and creating learning targets.
You with Dr. So Tuttle?
I am with Dr. Tuttle, yes.
Yeah, very good, man.
And how impactful it can be just to have the learning targets on your HyperDocs, because
yeah.
I know in high school we never had learning targets.
Yeah, man.
Like, I'm sure our teachers had them written down in their lesson
yeah,
plans.
Right.
But they don't use them.
No. And you might have been given them and just forgot them or tuned it out or whatever.
Yeah.
Huh.
But I really like the idea of learning targets, and stealing one of your ideas and using landing pads.
Oh yeah.
Via Google Docs.
Okay. Let's talk about landing pads. That's not something I was prepared to ask you, but it's a great segue. Describe what a landing pad is or was in my class.
So we used Google Docs, drawings, all that jazz.
Uh-huh.
And I guess it's basically a way of turning in an assignment, and you highlight, everybody has a name on a Google document.
Just a roster, yeah.
Just a class roster, and you highlight your name, and you make your name basically a hyperlink.
Right.
To your project or whatever it was, if it was a paper. And I would really like to use that since going into history. I'll probably have them write a paper. I know, that's mm-hmm. that's history, you know, it's typical stuff. But, and just giving feedback to others because they can see, rather than having to share the link and share it with other people, yeah. It's right there on demand, built into your HyperDoc.
Now, see, I think that that's really interesting because a lot of times when people talk about virtual instruction, here's what they'll say. I got all these students, they're on this Zoom call or Teams call or whatever. Half of them have their screen muted. Half of them are doing whatever, and I'm just talking to the wall. It's so essential to get students collaborating in a virtual setting. And a great way to do it is with a landing pad where you can maybe break them up into small groups and have them collaborate on what they've created, but they don't have to be in the same place. For instance, in our class last summer, I mean, hardly anybody was in the same town. And yet I felt like the collaboration was pretty good. A great example was when you and that other student watched each other's video and collaborated on that. And I think there's in some ways more potential for deeper collaboration virtually than in person, because when you two were collaborating with one another, you two were like face to face on a Teams call. There was no like distractions off to the side, like the, you know, I think there's that potential.
There definitely is. Because you're more focused, like you said.
Okay, so
it's being able to see that person as well.
Think about this. Think about encouraging student collaboration outside of the in-person time period. Like, for instance, you have a group of students that you see every day at 9 o'clock, but on the evening before class, they are supposed to collaborate in small groups, and then you can get together in class the next day and collaborate on a much larger scale. That might be a way to encourage that virtually.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think the alternative to that would be breaking them up into groups and sending one to the hallway, one to the library, and there's still distractions.
Yeah.
So it's a way to avoid it.
Uh-huh. Excellent. Now, I want you to speculate here. Again, how about your feel about virtual instruction, your potential as an instructor in participating in virtual instruction in the future?
I would say that before, I would even say after I took our summer class that I was still like, virtual instruction, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, nothing that I would, you know, write home about. But it's something that, when used correctly, in my opinion, can do great things. And
right.
Even, like, I would think of, you know, hosting a review session the night before a big test.
Right.
Or for state testing or anything like that. Because they need to see, I mean, they obviously need to review, but you can't do it class by class.
No.
And expect the same thing, where you can have everybody together and there's even more ideas being bounced off each other's mm-hmm. minds.
Very good. Now, this is a question I love asking students like you. I mean, you've been a student a long time. I mean, what 14 years or something like that?
Somewhere along those lines.
So you've been a student longer than you haven't been a student. And so you've observed a lot of educators. And, you know, there's some educators that are old school and some educators that are really innovative, and both have their strengths. You probably had some old school teachers you loved. You had some innovative teachers you loved, and vice versa, the ones that you didn't like. But you cannot successfully be a teacher in the 21st century unless you're open to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to evolve. I used to have a biology teacher. He was just a good old boy from southeastern Ohio, and he used to say, a species has three choices. They can either migrate, mutate, or lay down and die. So what's your advice to both older, younger teachers, whatever, about the importance of evolving as an educator? What's your advice, my man?
I would say you may have, you know, tried and true methods that mm-hmm. you believe are going to work.
Right.
And one day it's going to backfire, no matter what. and just finding the alternative. And, you know, virtual instruction is becoming more and more popular. We can't deny it.
No.
And just in general, helping your students and, you know, being able to see what they need, and you need to evolve with them. You know, I know a lot of my middle school teachers still used just take notes, pen, paper.
Oh, yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, when I got to, I think, freshman year high school, we didn't, and we were interactive, and it created a great environment for everybody.
Yeah.
So just finding that what really makes the students learn well and mm-hmm. and how they respond to what you're teaching. And again, it's okay if it backfires. You can find something else.
Yeah.
But use your technology to your advantage and see how it works.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Hey, you know, this is something that I tell a lot of people, and I'll bet you do the same. You might not, but I'm taking a leap there. When I don't know how to do anything, you know, if there's something like fixing a leaky faucet, you know, figuring out how to use some platform, changing a tire, changing a bike tire, I just go on YouTube.
You're 100% right.
And I find, get this, Ethan, the shortest damn video, because I don't want to watch 15-minute video on how to change a bike tire. I watched the 3-minute video on how to change a bike tire, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so easier. So much easier than I thought it was going to be. And when I do that, I feel this great sense of achievement and all that. But the point is that there's YouTube videos on pretty much anything. I mean, you know, you got that guy, John Green, that does all the history lectures, whatever. I mean, he's probably going to do it better than you're going to do it.
Absolutely.
So why try to compete? Why not use John Green to your advantage and then build off that? So that's kind of my theory about that. And hey, I'll tell you one other thing that I want to say about the virtual on-demand syllabus. And I think you'll back me up on this. You were done pretty damn quickly on almost every one of those prompts. Like, I would give you guys a prompt on like a Monday, and like it was due on a Thursday, and by gosh, Tuesday morning yours was done. Was that freeing to you to not have to wait to be able to just knock it out, bam, on demand, right now?
It was, and I will say that has transferred over this semester mm-hmm. to just me in general learning. I mean, the last semester, spring semester, I'll be honest, I lacked off a little bit,
mm-hmm.
didn't put in 100% effort, and it was because I couldn't manage my time. I wasn't managing my time correctly.
Right.
But what I've done this year is taken every assignment, put it in my planner, and it's done at least the day before.
Right.
I don't care how long it takes. It's getting done the day before. That way, mm-hmm. the next day, I can relax, do what I need to do. And, you know, like last night, some of the golf team came over. We played cards for a couple hours, you know, and it's the freedom to do that and balancing school and friends.
That's important. That's really important. And one last thing I want to lay on you, and Ethan will probably back me up on this, although he hasn't disagreed with me yet. Maybe this will be his opportunity. But I do like the appearance of my syllabus. It was shaped like a pyramid.
Yes.
And so, like, you know, like these ideas build upon one another, and there's an image in the show notes. Go check it out. But he's also in the 341 class, and I think you have a syllabus kind of similar to that, don't you? No, you might not.
Maybe not. I don't think so.
I used one that was very similar to that, and I was trying to mimic the Bloom's Taxonomy Pyramid. And so the very top of the pyramid was the Capstone Project, and I think we did that still in 517 and 335 last summer. So I wanted to capture that image. If you want to make a really, really cool looking syllabus, there's a website that I'm going to link on the show notes called Lucid Chart, where you can pretty much make any design you want, but it's just going to be a lot more attractive, a lot more compelling. And so that's the last thing I want to say about this. So Ethan, when's your next golf match?
We have our next tournament this Saturday and this Sunday.
What's the weather supposed to be like?
Oh, hopefully good.
Yeah. I imagine
we're
that you're
up north, so, and it rained a lot up there, and I'm like, oh boy.
Well, you know, but if you are someone who tends to overshoot the green, it might be helpful.
Just a little.
If you hit a ball off the tee and it never gets off the ground and rolls onto the green, then the ground's probably a little too dry.
Just a wee bit.
Okay, what classes you got tomorrow, my man?
Tomorrow, I just have, I'm a mentor for the first year seminar class for all the incoming freshmen.
Good for you.
So I have that, and then I have Introduction to Ethics.
So, oh, wow. Very interesting. Do the young freshmen seem like they're about 12 years old to you?
No, surprisingly not. They seem like they're about my age, and I'm like, you are my age. It doesn't make sense.
Hey, you tell, when are you going to see Dr. Tuttle again?
Oh, boy. Probably not till Monday.
You tell her I said hello, man.
I will definitely.
You tell her I said hello, and you tell her what you did with me.
I will definitely tell her that.
All right, my friend. So good talking to you. Thank you so much.
No problem. Sounds good.
So here we are at the What You Can Do Tomorrow section, and the problem is simple. Many educators want to ditch any tactic that reminds them of virtual instruction and learning during COVID. People want to turn that page, baby, and I totally understand it. But the solution is to evaluate what was successful during COVID instruction and then incorporate it, or whatever the tactic is, into in-person instruction. So what you can do tomorrow is take an inventory of successful tactics that you employed during virtual instruction. And then phase in at least one of these tactics next week in your in-person setting. Explore creating an interactive syllabus with Lucidchart, and there is a link to Lucidchart on the show notes. And then also explore creating a higher level thinking prompt via HyperDocs. There's a link to HyperDocs on the show notes. During COVID, we all had to improvise. Some of what we did was awesome. Let's evolve as educators and incorporate some of those innovative ideas into our in-person instruction. And good luck tomorrow engaging your kids.
Show notes for this episode can be found at jamesallensternovant.com. If you enjoy Hacking Engagement, please subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes.